Well, greetings, everyone. Welcome to the Law Hour Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabel, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week in more than 112 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on America is a Christian Nation when we come back. 3,300 years ago, Moses instructed our fathers. He said, "You shall not have in your bag diverse weights, a great and a small. You shall not have in your house diverse measures, a great and a small, but you shall have a perfect and a just weight, a perfect and a just measure shall you have." Well, our founding fathers at the Constitutional Convention back in 1787 followed that scriptural principle of law when they put into our Constitution at Article 1, Section 10, these 17 words. It says, "No state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debts." But in 1933, President Roosevelt took our gold away, and in 1964, President Johnson took silver coin out of circulation. Now, in place of just weights and balances, these two presidents have introduced our current practice of the first, second, and fifth planks of the Communist Manifesto into our monetary system, and they have given us Federal Reserve notes in place of gold-backed treasury bills and clad coinage in place of silver coins. And now, in the intervening 70 years or so, we Americans have gone from being the world's number one creditor nation until now we're the world's number one debtor nation. Now, who do you think were the better financial planners for our country? Moses and our founding fathers, or Franklin D. Roosevelt and Lyndon Baines Johnson? Now, if you'd like to learn more about hard money and how to use it properly, it's another of the many lessons in our Mosaic Law School. We conduct that school here twice a year at the law school. If you'd like to learn more, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package first? That's the place to start. It's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. Remember, it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free. You can call and order one right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, our Mosaic Law School is also available on compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Just click on the email and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Again, georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Do it right now while you're thinking about it before you forget. All right, we're talking about America, the Christian nation. I reported to you last time that America may have been at one time a Christian nation. It may have been bandied about by our founding fathers or somebody else. There's been some controversy along that line, but it's no longer. And that's because the Supreme Court made a ruling some years back, and they called it a secular humanist government, a secular humanist form of religion. It's the replacement. It's the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto replacement of the Ten Commandments. Now, here in America, we used to practice the Ten Commandments as the basic principle of law. It came from Anglo-Saxon administration, goes back to Mount Sinai. About 1913, we adopted the fifth plank to the Communist Manifesto and established a national central bank. It's called the Federal Reserve System here in the United States. Beginning in 1913, we not only adopted the fifth plank, but in 1937, we adopted the tenth plank, free education for all children in public school at the federal level. Beginning with the Roosevelt years, we began to implement these ten planks to the Communist Manifesto and to root out the Ten Commandments. We have now banished the Bible, the Ten Commandments, and prayer from our public schools, as an illustration. We have established what we call here in this country the separation of church and state. We have totally separated the God of creation, the God of Moses, from all of our secular and our social activities here in the United States, at least public social activities. So what caused that? Why are we doing that? Well, evidently it must have sounded good when it was proposed. A guy named Paul Warburg came over here in 1907 from the Rothschilds and the Bank of England to promote this national central bank idea. From 1907 to 1913, they got it passed. Americans have not repealed it from that day to this, and in fact, there's been a couple of three attempts by national Republican Party candidates to repeal it or to modify it, but it's gone nowhere, which just leads me to believe that the people of America believe in it, love it, want to participate in it, and by God, that's what we're going to do. Now, it's a choice that we had to make, and we made it. And I'm not here to evangelize and tell you that you made a mistake, and you better change your ways, or you're going to go to hell and burn forever. I'm not an evangelist. But every event, every action has an equal opposite reaction. You know, in physics, you know, they taught us that every action has an equal opposite reaction. When we make decisions in life, well, those decisions have repercussions. Things happen. Make a choice, and then something happens. Now, oftentimes, we're unable to connect the dots. And so last time I pointed out Dr. Everett Sullivan, he was connecting the dots between the marriage license and the state's action coming against him and his Baptist school. I showed you that common law marriage in Tennessee is something different than civil law marriage in California. And then I read your story here about the Department of Health and Human Services Agency in Shasta County, California, explaining to this lady why she needed a birth certificate. And so we went through that birth certificate story yesterday. Well, let me tell you another story or two here today concerning these birth certificates, because down in Texas, Texas just recently, the state came in, took 400 children out of a Mormon compound. I don't know if you call it a Mormon compound or a farm or a hideaway or a religious cult or, you know, hang a label on it, whatever turns out. And these Mormons down here, they're incensed, they're upset. You know, you'd be upset if the state came in, took your children. It's no doubt a very traumatic experience. And they're meeting this challenge with a number of different attitudes. You know, they're being interviewed on the news. And some of them say they welcome the state coming in and giving their children psychological tests. Welcome the state. Okay, that's a communist saying, well, I'm a communist and I'm following straight communist party line and I welcome the state to come in and check my credentials as a communist. Well, that's fine. And if that's what you want, that's what you got. I personally don't care much for the state interfering or intervening in my family. If I want to whip my kid, I want to whip him. And if I want to deprive him of something, I want to deprive him of something. If I want to educate him in a certain way, I want to educate him in that way. And I don't want social lady telling me how to educate my kid or how to correct him. But here in America, we have social lady looking over our shoulder, directing education, directing discipline, supervision of families, and the way we feed our children and so on. That's right. Even the way we feed our children is being monitored by social lady. Now, not too long ago, well, I should say not too long ago. For an old man like me, it wasn't too long ago. You know, 30 years ago wasn't too long ago, but this goes back a few years. I received from one of my students a document. It's entitled the United States of America Department of Commerce, Bureau of the Census in Washington, Notification of Birth Registration. How do you like that? It's called Notification of Birth Registration. Great big bold letters here. Fancy script. Department of Commerce, Bureau of the Census. Now, you'd think that if anybody in Washington was going to keep track of the people of America, it would be the State Department, which issues our passports. Why the Commerce Department? You know, why not the Department of Agriculture? Or why not the Department of something else? Why the Department of Commerce? Well, a case was decided back in 1939, which was called Edwards versus California. Very, very important case as it relates to this thing of birth certificates and state ownership of your children, which I reported to you last time. You know, the Attorney General of Texas said, is it true that the state of Texas owns our children? And the Attorney General said, yeah, it's true. And not only you, your children, but you too. So I thought today we ought to explain that. Now, ordinarily, when we get our birth certificate, we write, you know, if you want to test this out, just go ahead, and you write to your state department in California, where I'm from. It's the Department of Vital Statistics. It's now located in Sacramento, California, because I wanted my birth certificate years ago so I could resend it. I needed a copy of it. And I wrote to the county clerk where I had been born in Humboldt County, California, and she informed me that they don't have those records in Humboldt County anymore. So it used to be done at the county level. In ancient times, it used to be done at the family level. The family level, that is, it was recorded in your family Bible. And the patriarch of your family recorded your births and deaths and divorces and marriages and things like that. The Department of Vital Statistics in your family was your family Bible. Then somebody came along and said, gee, wouldn't that be better done down here at the county courthouse? And so we adopted that form. And then somebody said, wouldn't it be better if we did that down here at the Department of Vital Statistics in Sacramento, California? Shouldn't we centralize this process? Oh, that sounded like a good idea, so we did that. Now I want to report to you that this birth is also recorded in Washington, D.C. at the Department of Commerce. So let me read it to you. It says, United States of America, right across the top up here, Department of Commerce, Bureau of the Census, Washington, D.C., Notification of Birth Registration. And it says, this certifies that the following record of birth is registered and preserved in the office of the State Registrar of Vital Statistics at Helena, Montana. And they name the person here, sex male, number 6319, date of birth, April 23rd, 1939, place of birth, Wolf Point, name of father, and name of mother's maiden name. And here's who signed this. This is signed by a fellow named Austin, W.L. Austin, the director of the census. Here comes a census in here. And W.F. Cogswell, special agent, Bureau of the Census. Special agent, Bureau of the Census. And this comes from the U.S. government printing office, and they got a number down here on it. And there's a case I got to tell you about that was decided back in the Roosevelt years. It was called Edwards versus California. And this guy, Edwards, went out to California. He lived in Texas, and so he went out to California. And his primary reason for moving out there was because this is during the Great Depression. Now, California paid higher welfare benefits than to Texas. And so this guy, no dummy, I said, well, since I'm retired now and I'm in the New Deal and I want higher wages, I'll go out to California and settle my ass out there. Well, California, having been paying higher welfare payments, of course, they passed a law and they said, well, you can't draw these higher welfare payments here in California unless you're born here in California or you lived here for a certain amount of time. And so when Edwards got out there and they wouldn't pay him the higher benefits, he sued and took the case to Washington, D.C., took it to the U.S. Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court came back and said, you got to pay him these higher welfare benefits. And Justice William O. Douglas wrote a blistering dissent and he was the justice who was famous for writing all these dissents. He said, we've reached the right conclusion, but for all of the wrong reasons. Now, I always liked Douglas. He said, we've reached the right conclusion. Edwards is, in fact, entitled to these higher welfare benefits, and it is a discriminatory policy on the part of California. But we reached that conclusion for all the wrong reasons. Now, here's what the reasoning was. The court divided 5-4, and they said he's entitled to these because he's an article in Congress. The Supreme Court in Edwards versus California said that Mr. Edwards was an article in commerce, and that he was regulated under the Commerce Clause at Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution. And of course, Justice Douglas looked at that and said, well, you know, he's entitled to the higher welfare benefits, but that's because he's a citizen of the United States, and because, but not because he's an article in commerce. Years later, back around 1970, you know, this is 1939 that this came out. And so, you know, after Justice Douglas had been on the bench for about 30 years, he came to a conclusion. He wrote a pretty interesting book called Points of Rebellion, in which he finally understood what was going on here with this birth certificate. Because in the Bible, in Leviticus 20, verses 1 through 5, it instructs us. Here's God himself. Now he says, don't you pass your seed through the fire to Moloch. Well, in ancient times, you look this up, you know, in a Bible commentary, in ancient times, families, people, they used to take one of their children, usually their firstborn, and then they would sacrifice him to their god. Pagan societies do that to this day. They'll take a virgin up on top of the volcano, you know, down in Indonesia or someplace, and throw her into the volcano and sacrifice her to the gods. That was called passing your seed through the fire to Moloch. They used to give one child to God, and they keep the rest of them. Well, here in the United States, we're a pretty religious bunch of people here. We give all of our children to Moloch, and we call it the birth certificate. And we pass our seed through the fire to Moloch by dedicating all of them. We give title to our children to the state. And this birth certificate here identifies this process. You know, most of us don't think much about it. You know, we're most of us in heat, you know, when we get married, and so we're not thinking too much about law. You know, we're thinking more about sex. But after the sex is over and done with, you know, then we come down to the realities of law again, boys and girls. You know, what is the ultimate outcome of this going to be? So down in Texas, the ultimate outcome of those Mormons down there, they find out that the state of Texas owns their children, and that the state of Texas disagrees with their Mormon theology. That's what it boils down to. We disagree with your child-rearing practices. And so we're going to come in here and take our children that you passed through the fire to Moloch, which your God warned you not to do. But of course, most religious people, they don't pay much attention to the Bible or God. I mean, they've got their take on religion, which is totally separate from God and the Bible. Then, of course, the state comes in and they've got their take on religion, which is totally separate from the religious adherents and the Bible and God. It's something totally different. So there's the story now on the Department of Commerce and Edwards versus California. You are an article in commerce regulated under the Commerce Clause. How do you like that, boys and girls? Now, that's pretty important. Pretty important. So let me turn that page over, and then we'll take a look at another little part of the story. I had a student in here one time. His name is Randy. This is quite a few years ago. This letter here is dated October the 20th, 1986. And so this is back in the 1980s, 20 years ago now or more. And this young fellow, student here in school, 20 years ago, he had a little boy, and the little boy was not registered and did not attend public school. He was being homeschooled by Mr. and Mrs. Randy here. So one day, this fellow Randy receives this letter. And it came from the St. Joseph County Department of Social Services, located at 615 East Main Street in Centerville, Michigan. And it's written by a lady by the name of Sherry Salmonson. This is the social lady, that sweet lady, you know, that went to college and got her degree in social work. And now she's working for the government. That's the way she stays out of the pool holes and off the street corner. So she wrote Randy this letter, and it said, Dear Mr. and Mrs. Randy, so this is to inform you that there has been a complaint filed with the Children's Protective Services stating that your son Robert is not attending school. Now, I want you to notice there's been a complaint filed. Well, who filed this complaint? Well, I want to tell you that I didn't complain about Mr. and Mrs. Randy educating their child at home. I couldn't care less. So George and Jackie Gordon did not file any complaint. I was not concerned about these people at all. I didn't know if their kid was being educated and whether he went to public school or private school or any school, and I didn't care, and I still don't. But somebody did, and somebody filed a complaint with the Children's Protective Services. Now, that's with the welfare department. Somebody called the welfare department and said, there's this little kid out here playing on the street, and he should be in school. This is somebody with a big nose. That's your neighbor, who has a big nose and thinks that they know more about raising your child than you do. Now, somewhere along the line, we Americans who have big noses, as illustrated by the fact that we have military bases in 732 military bases in 100 and some odd countries, 130 countries. We Americans have our nose in everybody's business. It's just a part and parcel of Americans. We just can't live unless we got our nose stuck right up your you-know-what. And it's that way in this country. So if you think that we're just sticking our nose in your business over in Iraq or Afghanistan or Azerbaijan or someplace else, no. Americans can't live, can't breathe, can't exist without sticking their nose in somebody else's business and directing everybody else's operations. And we do it right here in this country. And so your son Robert is not attending school because you have not enrolled him and do not choose to have him attend. So I contacted the Sturgis Public Schools and found that Robert was not enrolled and that you had been contacted about this matter. And I'm told that you reported that Robert is enrolled in another school, but that you refused to state what that school was. Now, please be informed that Michigan law requires that children 6 years and older must receive an education in an accredited program. It is your right to select the program, but it must meet the requirements of the law. And if you refuse to comply with the law, you may be subject to prosecution or to charges of child neglect. Pay attention here. See how this is coming down? Charges of child neglect. Why would anybody want to charge you or me or anybody else with child neglect because your kid isn't in public school? Who's concerned about that? Well, first of all, let's understand that every child in public school is worth $56 a day. That's how much that school gets paid for every kid that's there. And every day that that kid is absent, he does not. That school does not get their 56 bucks. And that's why they're concerned about your kid being in school every day. Secondly, that school gets double that amount of money, almost double, not quite, but almost, if your child is incapacitated in some way. So if your child has ADHD or is in a wheelchair, they get double that, $108 a day. That's why they want your kid on Ritalin. Has nothing to do with educating your child. Has nothing to do with the health, safety, or welfare of the public. It has to do with money, pure and simple. That's where reality is located. Now, this kid's not in school, and so naturally the school authorities are sitting there saying, oh my God, we're losing 56 bucks a day. We've got to do something about this. So the legislature comes up with laws, compulsory attendance laws for school. Now, there's three places you can educate your child. Now, compulsory education is mandated by God Almighty at Mount Sinai in the Ten Commandments. I don't know if you knew that or not, but it is. So compulsory education is not something new. It's been around in Anglo-Saxon administration for at least 3,000 years. What's new is that the state comes in and says, you got to educate your child in this public school. That's new. That didn't exist in this country until 1937, at least at the federal level. So here's this guy, Fry. Now, just picture this. What if you got this letter from Sherry Salmonson and said, hey, how come your kid ain't in school? Because that's what just happened to these Mormon people down here in Texas. I mean, that's got to be a gut-wrenching, you know, exciting feeling. That'll get your adrenaline flowing. Now, I attempted recently, she went on to say, to visit you at your home to discuss this matter, but found no one at home. Please contact me by phone or letter to let me know if the above information is incorrect and to verify your son's attendance in an approved program. Now, if you have any questions about your legal responsibilities, accredited program and legal responsibilities, or your choices, I'd be happy to discuss these with you. Please contact the Children's Protective Services Unit. And she gives a phone number here, by Friday, October the 24th, to verify Robert's attendance or to set up an appointment to discuss the matter. If we do not hear from you by that date, we will initiate legal action. So here's your letter. And Randy got this. He called me on the phone. He read me the letter, and he said, should I answer it? And I said, well, of course you should answer it. Now, a lot of these legal gurus running around say, oh, no, don't give them jurisdiction. Just ignore them. Don't answer it. They don't have any jurisdiction over you. Well, wait a minute here. Hang on a second. This guy, Randy Fry, is a citizen here in the United States and a voter, isn't he? I mean, he's a sovereign citizen over here. He's a part and parcel with the problem, isn't he? What do you mean Sherry Salmonson doesn't have jurisdiction? You got a kid running around down the streets over here. He's not in public school. You got a law over here that requires that all children, you know, between the ages of 7 and 16 attend school in some form until they're 16. So I dissent. I think that you should answer these inquiries. And if, in fact, you're liable to some law, rule, regulation, custom, usage, or practice, you know you ought to practice it. Let me give you an illustration. You know, we're all Democrats and we all believe in voting. So I suppose that 10 of us are down here at the Pizza Hut and we're just sitting around the table having a good time. And somebody proposes, somebody comes to this conclusion. They say, let's have a vote. Let's have a vote. Let's decide who pays the bill democratically. And I vote that George Gordon pays the bill. How many of you are in favor? Everybody, all nine other people raise their hand and they say, well, we think George Gordon ought to pay the bill. Well, then, you know, being a Democrat and all, well, shouldn't you therefore raise at least a protest vote and vote no? No, I don't think that George Gordon should pay. Well, you're outvoted 9-1. The will of the popular majority is that George Gordon should pay the bill. So how should you handle this? Should you handle it politically or should you handle it legally? Politically, the people of America believe that everybody should attend public school. So how should we handle this politically or legally? Now, if you vote no, you're outvoted 9-1. I'll tell you what I would do. I would stand up and I would voice my objection to somebody taking my property without my consent. This is a taking without just compensation. That's number one. I'm protected against that by the Fifth Amendment. That's number two. Number three, I'm not a Democrat and I'm not going to vote. I'm just going to object and refuse to pay. And if you don't like it, then what are you going to do about it? Well, you can sue me. And that's what Sherry Salmonson is saying. You know, we'll instigate or institute legal action against you. Most people, when faced with legal action, melt like jellyfish in the hot sun, and then they just do what they're told. Has anybody ever thought that maybe we ought to go in and tell the judge what the story is? Because that's what Randy Fry did. See, Randy Fry wrote her a letter. In fact, he wrote her a series of letters. There's about four or five letters went back and forth between October the 20th, 1986, and November the 13th, 1986. Now, that's a period of 23 days. In 23 days, there were two or three letters that went back and forth. Randy Fry wrote her a letter right back. She wrote a letter back. He wrote a letter back to her. And she finally wrote this letter back. Here's just one sentence. Now, on November the 13th, 1986, here's what Sherry Salmonson said. She said, upon a review of your case, the St. Joseph County Department of Social Services has determined that we will not be proceeding with our investigation. This took 23 days. He didn't send his kid to public school. He wasn't prosecuted. Something happened with these two or three letters that went back and forth. What happened? The people in Texas, they didn't have the opportunity to write these two or three letters. You might. So listen up. We'll take our break right here, and we'll be back with more on America as a Christian Nation right after this. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 112 countries worldwide, daily over the Internet and radio. For more information about the Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's eight schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by pre-arrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults in compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated every week and has our radio log schedule and archives. And all of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school and asking for it. The number to call is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views or the beliefs or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about America being that famous Christian nation over here that we like to brag about. So let's go back here and let's talk about this voting thing over here. Now, let's suppose for the sake of our discussion that the same 10 people that are over here now in the Pizza Hut, remember they just had a vote and decided that George Gordon ought to pay for dinner here tonight. Let's suppose that the same 10 people got together here at Pizza Hut and we discussed opening a club. And we'll just call it the Isabella, Missouri After Dinner Club. And we all decide that we should form a club, and maybe it should be incorporated. So we go to the state, and we get this recorded and registered, and we get a trademark. And we elect officers, and, you know, we just get right into it up to our elbows. And we have bylaws, and we have rules and regulations and one thing and another, and we have a secret code and a pledge and all the stuff, you know, that people get involved in when they join the Masonic Order or the Elks or the Lions or, you know, whatever, PTA, whatever you want to join, National Rifle Association. Now, let's go to the Pizza Hut, and all of a sudden somebody stands up and says, well, I think that what we ought to do is have a vote here as to who buys dinner, and my vote is for George Gordon to buy dinner. And so the other eight people, you know, energetically jump up, wave their hands, and say, yes, yes, we believe George Gordon ought to buy dinner. Now, George Gordon now has a right to vote and registers his vote and says, no, I don't think I ought to pay, and I'm not going to. And so one of the other members of the club then sues George Gordon in the local Associate Circuit Court in Ozark County, Missouri, alleging that George Gordon is in violation of the bylaws of the After Dinner Club of Isabella, Missouri, and that he refused to buy dinner after a legitimate, lawful vote of the members of the club. How do you think Judge Jacobs is going to rule on that? Well, I can tell you, coming right out of the chute, Jacobs is going to rule, Gordon, you're a member of the club. And because you're a member of the club, you're bound by the club's rules and bylaws and regulations, and the club has a rule, regulation, and bylaw that says majority votes bind the members to specific performance, and the majority voted for you to buy dinner. You didn't buy dinner, you're guilty as hell, and we're going to impose a penalty upon you. Well, boys and girls, when you join the marriage club and the birth registration club of your state, you have a binding legal duty, a binding legal obligation to follow the laws, the rules, the bylaws, and regulations of the club. And the club in this case is the state of Texas. And the state of Texas has some rules. And they say to all you Mormon people down there, here are the rules of our club. And you people aren't playing the game by our rules. Has it ever occurred to us, going back now to Randy Fry here, has it ever occurred to us that maybe what we ought to do is stay out of the club? What did Randy write to Sherry Salmonson? He wrote her a couple letters. What did he say in those letters? Okay, here's what he said. He said, "Dear Miss Salmonson, it's been a pleasure doing business with you. I'm so happy that you're concerned about my son Robert's not receiving a good education. And therefore, I want to write you this letter and let you know that, number one, my son Robert does not have a birth certificate. Number two, I do not have a marriage license. And number three, you don't have jurisdiction." That's what he wrote. Now, they went back to their legal department and they said, "Well, how do you want to handle this?" Now, sometimes these bureaucrats, they don't know what the limits of their powers are. That's what happened down in Texas. They've got a lot of power. Social lady down in Texas has a lot of power, but they exceeded the amount of power that they had. And the state Supreme Court came down on the state the other day and they said, "Hey, wait a minute. It is true you can come in here and regulate these children, but it isn't true that you can just come in here and do it like you're doing it." So social lady has a role in civilized society, and you and I have a role in that same civilized society. And when you join the club, like the Isabella, Missouri After Dinner Club, and you agree to the rules and regulations and bylaws, you know, you're bound to it. And when they vote that you pay for dinner, just shut up and write the check. But what if you're not a member of the Isabella After Dinner Club, and the members decide that you ought to pay for dinner? Don't you think you ought to rely upon your legal rights and let them go ahead and sue you, and then go in and explain to the judge, "I'm not a member of that club, and they're seeking by popular vote to take my property without just compensation, and that violates Anglo-Saxon administration"? Because that's what Randy Fry did. Now, I had another student in here one time. He's a pretty interesting guy. His name is Joe. He's a contractor, Joe the contractor. And old Joe's got a little girl. She's 8 years old, and Joe wants to educate his 8-year-old kid. Now, he at home. He lives in Virginia. He moves from Virginia to Coffeyville, Kansas. And, of course, in Coffeyville, Kansas, they want his kid in public school, because if his kid is in public school, they're getting 56 bucks a day. So Joe is educating his kid at home. He gets a letter from their local welfare people out there and says, "Hey, listen, we hear your kid ain't in school." So he went down to the school and he said, "It's true. My child is not in public school. My child is being educated at home, and here's what we're doing at home." Now, the state will have some rules and regulations concerning homeschooling, like they do in our state here, Missouri. And so if we're going to educate our child at home, then we have to comply with the state's requirements concerning homeschooling. And in our state, it's fairly innocuous. And over in Kansas, I think it was fairly innocuous. In Pennsylvania, it isn't. It's kind of onerous. But, you know, different states have different rules. But you can educate your child at home in public school or in private school. The choice is yours. And then the state regulates that. But then the regulation, the law that requires you to educate your child, comes from God himself. God requires all human beings on planet Earth to be educated. And your creator goes a step further and says, "I want them all educated in my law. I want them all educated here in these standards, in these Ten Commandments, in these statutes, and in these judgments." Of course, we Americans came up with a new conclusion. We said, "Well, we're going to educate our kid, but we're going to educate our children to the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. We are not going to educate our children to the 10 Commandments." Now, that's a choice that we had to make, and we made it. And every day that you send your child to public school, you reinforce that decision. And every day you send your child to public school, you are demonstrating to God and the state and everybody else that you are, in fact, a practicing communist, practicing the 10th plank to the Communist Manifesto, and God can just go to hell. Now, that's your vote. Now, you might not view it that way, but that's exactly what you're doing. And that's your choice, and that's your right, given to you by God himself. In fact, God himself said in Deuteronomy 30, he said, "I want you to choose this day who you're going to follow. You're going to follow me, or you're going to follow Baal." Now, the people down there, the Mormons down in Texas, they decided they're going to practice communism, and they're going to follow Baal. And so now they're just mad as hell because Social Lady came out there and said, "Well, we disagree with the way you're raising your children and the way you're educating them." And all those people joined the club. They all have marriage licenses, and all those children have birth certificates. And now they're down here bitching about the social lady coming in here and telling them how they're going to educate their kid and how they're going to do this and do that. Now, if you want to join the club, then sit down, shut up, and write the check. No, but you don't have to join the club. That's the good news. So Joe didn't join the club. Joe doesn't have a marriage license, and Joe doesn't have a birth certificate for this little girl. And so the school down there, they decided in Coffeyville, Kansas, "Well, I guess we'll leave this guy alone." So this is the second guy I'm telling you about now. And he's educating his kid over here at home. This goes on for 2 or 3 years. This little girl gets to be about 12 years old. I don't know if she got to be obnoxious or what. But one day, her mother decides that she's had it with this home education crap. And she is not going to educate this kid at home. She wants to send this kid to public school. Wants to get her the hell out of the house. So Joe goes down to the school, and he says, "I want to enroll my kid here in public school." So he takes his kid in to the Coffeyville Public School. I don't know what the name of it was. He has asked for her birth certificate, and he says, "Well, she doesn't have one." "Well, you have to go get one then." "Where's her vaccination record?" "Well, she doesn't have any vaccinations." "Well, if she doesn't have any vaccinations, then she can't go to school here." I mean, you know, the worm's turning now. See? Now, here's a state statute that says your kid has to attend public school till they're 16. You take your kid down to register him at the public school, and they say, "Wait a minute, that's fast there, partner. You got to have a birth certificate." Well, he could go down and get a birth certificate. The child, in fact, was born in Kansas, as it turns out, but Joe had moved to Virginia, lived there for a number of years, and he returned home to the family farm. And now he's been educating his kid at home for the last 3 or 4 years. And so now all of a sudden, now the wife doesn't want to educate the kid at home anymore. They want to put the kid in public school, and public school says, well, I got to have vaccinations. So Joe called me on the telephone, and he said, well, what do you think this is going to come out? And I said, well, in the final analysis, I said, Joe, you can't force the state to educate your child. Do you get that, boys and girls? You cannot force the state of Kansas to educate your child. You can rest assured that the state of Kansas is going to insist upon educating their child. But the state of Kansas is not going to educate your child, as evidenced by the United Nations. You see, the United Nations has a number of delegates that come from all over the world. And those delegates are not citizens of the United States. They don't have birth certificates for those children here in the state of New York. And they cannot send their children to PS 235 in New York City. They've got to find some other way to educate their kids. Public school is out of the question. Private school, they could probably do it there. Or homeschool, but they cannot send them to public school. They're not citizens. And this is why the state is really uptight about you folks out there that aren't getting birth certificates for your children, because the state wants to own all these children under the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. They do not want bottom-up 10 commandment government, limited rule from the bottom up with rights. Now they don't want that. So Joe went back down to the school board and he said, now listen, I pay taxes here in this county. And because I pay taxes in this county, you have a duty to educate my child. And for religious reasons, I'm a religious objector, I'm not going to get a birth certificate, and I'm not going to vaccinate my kid. And he came in with the vaccination statutes, and he came in with the tax statutes, and he said, and if you don't enroll my child in this school and educate her in this upcoming upcoming school year, I'm going to sue you here, I'm going to sue this school board, we're going to find out whether or not you can do this. Well, as it turned out, the legal department took a look at it, and they said, well, let's just enroll the kid and shut up. And they did. And that was the end of it. But Joe called me and told me, he said, hey, they backed down. I said, well, that happens. Most of the time, it's the citizen that backs down from the government bureaucrat. But in this case, the government bureaucrat is backed down from you. But I said, if this case ever went to litigation, and your state Supreme Court had to decide the question of, does the local school board have a duty to educate some child without a birth certificate, I would say that they're going to rule against you, and you do not have a right to have your kid educated at public expense. Now, in this case, he did, and he got away with it, but then I just wanted to report that to you. Now, if you join this regulated enterprise, like Edwards versus California, then you can rest assured that you're going to be regulated and controlled. Now remember that your birth certificate is recorded with the Department of Commerce. You remember that? Department of Commerce. So let's talk about that for a minute. Up in Washington State, they have a department up there called the Department of Human Resources. Now I looked at that Department of Human Resources and I said, what is that? And they said, well, it's the Department of Employment. And I said, oh yeah, I understand that. But he said, up in this is a student. I says, but up here in Washington, they call this the Department of Human Resources. I said, they do? Well, that's kind of odd, because I can remember as a small child, after World War II, they called it the Unemployment Department. In fact, they had great big bold letters that said Unemployment Department in Ukiah, California. My Uncle Carol was going down there to get his $25 a week unemployment benefits. Had to drive from Willits, 25 miles all the way to Ukiah, county seat. Then later on, they upgraded that to the Department of Employment. Then later, they changed the name to Job Service. And I haven't been in the employment business for a long time, but now up in Washington State, they call it the Department of Human Resources. So I thought, I wonder what the legal ramifications of that are. So I looked up the word resource in Bouvier's Law Dictionary, and it told me the definition of a resource. It's something that's used up in the manufacturing process. A resource is something used up in the manufacturing process. So a human resource would be a human who is being used up or consumed in the manufacturing process. I said, oh, makes all the sense in the world. You went down, got a social security number, remember? And you just declared yourself to be legally incompetent and unable to manage your affairs. And so the state says, okay, well, we own you. We got your birth certificate. And the 13th Amendment bars involuntary servitude. So you can't own people. I mean, people like George Gordon cannot own people like you. No, Joe Sixpack. You, Joe, are owned by somebody, the state of Texas or the state of Missouri. So if George Gordon wants to hire you, wants to use your labor, I have to go to your owner and rent you. See, makes all the sense in the world. So if I want to rent labor, I can't own labor. See, we used to have bond servitude. That comes from the Bible. See, God gave us bond servitude. Remember we talked about status? Bond servant is a status. There's 24 of these statuses of persons here in the United States. So I want to hire somebody. So here's the way this works. So the Weyerhaeuser company has a tree plantation. In fact, if you go out there in the countryside, it'll say the Weyerhaeuser tree plantation. And the Weyerhaeuser tree plantation needs to hire some hired help. And so they go to the owner, the Department of Human Resources of the state of Washington. And you know you're a bond servant, and so you want a job. And so you go down here And you apply for a job, and Weyerhaeuser comes down here, and so the Department of Human Resources is the broker. And the Weyerhaeuser company has to pay the state 16 2/3% of what they pay you, and they have a minimum wage. See, the state comes in and says, you got to pay this guy $5 and some change, or $6 and change. And then you got to give us 16% of that to rent this guy, because we own him. Now, if you don't believe that, you go out here and try to get a job someplace without paying unemployment insurance and workman's compensation. You go out here and try to get a job or sell your services without paying that tax to your master, and you see what happens, Joe. I think you're going to be surprised. I think you're going to be surprised, Joe. So when I tell you that the state owns you over here, and I cite to you from the Attorney General of Texas, and, you know, I write you, read you a letter here from the St. Joseph County Department of Social Services. You know, I'm not whistling Dixie through a straw hat, giving you a report, telling you where the rubber meets the road here. That's what the bottom line is. This is where the rubber meets the road. All right, so the Department of Human Resources in Washington, Edwards versus California, the birth certificate story, the Randy Fry story, the Joe Fillmore story. And then I told you the voting at the Pizza Hut story. You know, everybody wants to vote. And we Americans are just enamored with voting and democracy. And we learned this in the first grade. By the time you go to college, I mean, you guys, you know, you kids have graduated from college, and you're out here working for Barack Obama, and you just got to get out here and vote. Well, fine. Help people vote in Russia and China. Did you know that? Yeah, if you thought the communists didn't vote, you got that wrong. Communists vote. Boy, they're just real Democrats. They get right out there and vote. And they're very popular about it. And they like to get out here and they like to vote, you know, for you to pay for dinner. That's what I want to vote for. I want to vote for you to pay for dinner, Joe. Now, fortunately, here in Anglo-Saxon administration, under the Ten Commandments, we have a rule here. It's called the Fifth Amendment, that you can't appropriate somebody else's property without compensation. And when the government does that, they got to pay. You know, it's called a takings action. So what government does is they just work mightily to get you to join these popular democratic fronts like Social Security, driver's license, marriage license, birth certificate. If they can get you to join, they got you. They got you, Joe, Sally. So the trick is that they've got to persuade you that this is the way to go. Now, marriage is really, really exciting. It's very important. See, when I tell people that I don't have a marriage license, they look at me and gasp in horns, kind of like Judy Hartson, you know, she would gasp and take a breath. She'd go, like I had just, you know, kicked her in the gut. And then she would announce to me, I'm going to go tell Mr. Witt. That was our school teacher. And so Judy Hartson, who was the school busybody, you know, the nosy girl, you know, that just, you know, she should have gone into social work. Judy Hartson was the perfect social lady. She just had her nose in everybody's business. She's always walking around watching to see if everybody was following the rules so that she could go report you to Mr. Witt. She'd just be perfect running around on the streets looking for little kids out playing in mud puddles so that she could report them, you know, to the Children's Protective Services Agency and get social lady out there on your case arguing that, you know, you were not taking care of your child properly. All right, now that being the case over here, then this voting thing over here is a part and parcel with your problem, then, isn't it, Joe? I mean, if you think about it pragmatically, isn't your problem that you're voting and you join the club? All right, now there's three ways for you to get married. I told you the other day, I was going to tell you how these three work. Marriage is, here's what marriage is. A marriage is agreement with penetration. I know it sounds a little crass, but you know, that's what it is. A boy and a girl on a desert island in the South Pacific can marry. All they need is an agreement. Hey, Betty, will you marry me? Yes. Yes, I will, Bob. And consummation comes from the sex act. And sexual relations consummates the marriage. So a civil law marriage is a three-party, limited general partnership involving the boy, the girl, and the state. And it is an agreement. It is a contract by, for, among, or between these three parties, as evidenced by the marriage license. The marriage license creates this three-party limited general partnership. And your third party, that is the state, reserves to itself, under the terms and conditions of this contract, the right to alter, reform, amend, or repeal any portion of the contract without notice to you. And you signed that, Joe, Sally. You signed it. And the state up here at the legislature, they're every year, they're altering, reforming, amending, and changing the terms and conditions of the marriage law. And sure enough, they don't give you any notice at all, and you don't know what the current state of the law is concerning marriage. And you don't find that out until the police knock your door down and social lady comes and takes your kid. Number two, a common law marriage is a two-party contract between the boy and the girl. There may be a written instrument, but a written instrument is not necessary. The marriage is done by agreement and penetration. Many states recognize common law marriage, property, and children by the birth certificate of the parties. And it is therefore a little different than the civil law marriage, because most people that get a common or have a common law marriage, well, go get a birth certificate for the child. Isn't that just special? And if your state does not recognize common law marriage, that's all to your advantage. When Tennessee says, we don't recognize common law marriage, when you walk in and say, I got a common law marriage, they say, well, we don't recognize that. It's outside our jurisdiction. We can't handle it. Don't do that in Texas, because they can handle common law marriages in Texas. You betcha. They know exactly how to do that. So if you've got a common law marriage down in Texas, you might as well have a marriage license. Now, there's a third form of marriage over here. It's called a patriarchal marriage. It comes from the Bible. And this is the way God told us to marry to start with. But, you know, God's kind of dumb. He's old, dumb, out of touch with reality. And you and I went to college. Hell, you and I are smart. We got letters after our names, don't we? And so, therefore, we decided to improve upon the marriage of the Bible, the patriarchal marriage. But here's what it is. A patriarchal marriage is a contract between the boy and the girl's father. The girl isn't even a party to the contract. She's the object of the contract. She's the property. The father gives the girl to the boy in a public ceremony and transfers his liability to the boy. In Hebrew law, a female must be taken care of from the cradle to the grave. The contract terminates upon consummation. This is why we have a bride price. This is why we have dowries. The girl is a liability to her father. He needs to unload this liability. A wife is an asset to a husband. The boy needs a wife. He buys the wife from the father. It's called the bride price. The girl isn't a party to the contract any more than the cow is the party to the contract when I'm selling the cow to you. And this is what is so onerous to people. They say, oh my God, this is akin to white slavery. I've had that mentioned to me. Or prostitution. It has nothing to do with prostitution or white slavery. It has to do with what we call patriarchal marriage, which is what nobody wants to practice. I'm not here to sell you patriarchal marriage. I'm here to inform you that there was a third way for you to do this. Now, most of us do the civil law marriage, which is a three-party limited general partnership involving the boy, the girl, and the state. And when you do that, sit down, shut up, and do what social lady tells you to do. And then everything's going to be just fine. Hey, I'm about out of time here, boys and girls. And I have to remind you that you have been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard in more than 112 countries worldwide daily over the Internet and radio. For more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. And The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. Now, The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on a compact disc. And The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives. And it can be accessed through the website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. And The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, we're about out of time here, so I've got to give you a final reminder that we'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.